Unit 5. Note completion and true or false.
Listening activity number 19. You will hear a dialogue about accommodation in the UK. As you listen, fill in the gaps in the notes below and then answer the questions. Terry, who is from Australia, is talking to his friend Mary, who came to study history at Leeds University 2 years ago. He is asking her about accommodation.
So do you have to pay the rent weekly or monthly?
Well, usually monthly, but sometimes weekly. If it's weekly, then you have to pay it in advance on a fixed day of the week. Then, if you want to leave, you have to tell your landlady or landlord 1 week in advance on the day of the week on which you pay your rent.
All right, so that's 1 week's notice. What about monthly payment?
If you pay your rent monthly, you usually have to give 1 month's notice. But if you have furnished accommodation, or you don't get any meals, then legally you have to give 1 month's, even if you're paying weekly. So it is really important to have a definite arrangement with your landlady at the beginning of your tenancy, so you know the exact amount of notice you have to give. The same applies to the landlady if she wants you to leave. She has to give you either a week or a month's notice, whatever she decided. You usually have to pay a deposit too. If you do, you should make sure that you know exactly what it is for.
So I have to pay a deposit whenever I move to a new place then?
Yeah, most landladies ask for a deposit against damage or in lieu of notice.
What do you mean?
You know, if you have to leave without giving the required amount of warning. Or sometimes the deposit's on the key, which is returnable when you give it back when you come to leave.
That sounds fair enough.
You should really get a receipt for any deposit you pay, because it'll probably say what it's for. Oh, and you should also make sure that you have a rent book or some sort of receipt for your rent. If your landlady doesn't give you one, get one yourself and make sure that she signs it when you pay.
Why is that?
Well, you know, some students have had some trouble with paying their rent. Sometimes the landlady may say that you didn't pay, or something. So it is good to have a rent book to have proof.
Okay, so that's pretty important.
Yes. And quite often, there are house regulations written in the back of the rent book, or sometimes displayed somewhere in the house. They may well be a part of your contract of tenancy, so make sure you check them.
What happens if I want to share a room with a friend? Will that be allowed?
Well, if you have a single room, it should only be used by one person. If you want to share, you have to ask your landlady's permission, so it really depends on her.
Do I have to sign any contract or agreement with the landlady?
Yeah, sometimes, especially if you're living in self-contained accommodation. Make sure you read it really carefully, as it'll be legally binding, and you'll have to pay rent for as long as the agreement says. You can get legal advice if you're not sure about anything. Oh, and get a copy of it too.
Okay, thanks for your help. It'll be really useful, I'm sure.
Listening activity number 20. You are going to listen to a conversation between two students. As you listen, complete the following notes and answer the questions. Now listen to the conversation.
I hear you live in lodgings. How do you get on with your landlady?
Oh, really well, actually.
Yeah? I'm thinking of taking lodgings. Have you got any tips on living with a landlady or landlord?
Well, basically, I just try to fit in with the customs of household. So right at the beginning, you should find out when meals are served and be punctual for them. British people seem to get quite annoyed if you are late for the dinner table.
What about having friends round?
Yeah, it's a good idea to ask your landlady when the most convenient times are. And also for things like having a bath or receiving telephone calls. If you know you're going to be late for a meal, or late home at night, you should let her know so she can save your dinner or give you a key.
Do I have to do any housework?
No, no, you don't have to at all. But I'm sure your landlady would be really glad if you kept your part of the house clean and tidy and made your own bed, things like that. Of course, if you live in your own flat, you'll have to do the housework yourself.
What about gas or electricity? Is that included in the rent?
Sometimes, but usually it's an extra charge in lodgings. There'll be a meter, which you have to put coins into.
Oh, I've never seen one before. How do you use it?
Well, they vary quite a bit. You'll have to ask about how exactly it works. You may have to use some extra blankets. Not all places have central heating, and bedrooms can get pretty cold in the winter.
Oh no, I can't stand the cold.
Oh, it's not too bad. If it's really cold, you can buy a hot water bottle to warm the bed up before you get in. It would be very expensive to heat your bedroom throughout the night.
Good idea. I'll get myself a hot water bottle for winter.
Yeah, gas and electric heaters shouldn't really be left on all night anyway, unless you have good ventilation. If there is a gas fire in your room, you should really be careful about turning the gas tap off before you go to bed.
Oh yes, I always check the gas before I go to bed or go out.
You mustn't blow out the flame on the gas fire, or turn on the gas without lighting it immediately.
Yeah, you have to be really careful with gas.
Also, the voltage in the UK is 240 volts, so you should make sure that if you use any electrical appliances, it's the right voltage. I used my hairdryer without checking when I first arrived and fused all the lights.
I'll check all my stuff before I leave then. Thanks for the advice.
Unit 6. Summary.
Listening activity number 1. You are going to hear a talk about security in the UK. Listen to the talk and complete the statements below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
In large cities, for instance London, and crowded places such as airports and stations, there is the risk of theft. We do not want you to suffer the distress of losing important documents and valuables as soon as you step onto British soil. So here are some important do's and don'ts. Don't carry more cash than you need for daily expenses. If you stay at a hotel, do ask the manager to keep large sums of cash, documents and valuables in the hotel safe and give you a receipt for them. This is a free service. If cash is stolen, it is very unlikely to be recovered. Do keep separately a note of the serial numbers on your traveller's checks, so if they are lost, you can inform your bank. Do take particular care of bank and credit cards. Do carry wallets and purses in an inside pocket or a handbag. Don't ever leave a bag unattended and make sure it is securely fastened when you are carrying it. Do carry jewellery and valuables such as cameras, radios and typewriters on you or with you, and keep a note of any serial numbers. Do take special care of your passport, travel tickets and other important documents. Documents are at risk, particularly at airports and stations, where it is obvious that most people will be carrying them. Do make a note and keep it in a safe place of the number of your passport, its date and place of issue. This makes replacement easier if you are unlucky enough to lose it. If you don't want to carry heavy luggage around with you, you can leave it in a luggage office at most large stations and pick it up later. Keep the receipt so that you can reclaim your luggage. Check the opening hours or you may find your luggage locked away when you need it again. If you lose any of your luggage in transit, take this up immediately with the officials of the airline or shipping line. But don't worry too much. 98% is found within 3 days. If you lose anything, go first to the lost property office at the airport or station, as it may have been found and handed in. If you lose your luggage in the street or suspect it has been stolen rather than gone astray, find the nearest policeman who will advise you what to do. Listening activity number 2. You're going to hear a lecture on some useful information for your travelling around Britain. Listen to the first part of the lecture and complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
Good afternoon and welcome to the session on Britain. This afternoon I would like to provide some useful information for you about travelling around Britain. Britain has over 700 tourist information centres. You will find them at major ports, airports, stations, historic landmarks, and towns and holiday centres. So just look out for this sign that says tourist information. The staff will be able to answer your holiday queries as well as provide essential maps, guides, and brochures. Tourist information centres at major ports and airports in London and addresses of British Tourist Authority European offices are all listed on the tourist information centres. Now let's talk about the telephone in Britain. You know, Britain is well supplied with public telephones. Street kiosks take 10p coins. In city centres, mainline railway stations, airports and central London underground stations, payphones and card phones are in operation. For the latter, small plastic phone cards are used, and these come in 10, 20, 40, 100 and 200 units and can be bought at post offices, news kiosks, station bars and shops where the green and white card phone sign is displayed. When using the different public telephone systems, make sure you read the dialing instructions carefully. Now, let's see the banks in Britain. There are 24-hour banks at London's 2 main airports. One is Heathrow and the other is Gatwick. Otherwise, banks are normally open from 9:30 to 15:30 hours, Monday to Friday. Barclays Bank and National Westminster Bank offer a Saturday morning service at some of their branches. National Jarrow Bank has 42 bureaux de change located in post offices throughout the country in main tourist areas. Opening hours are 9 o'clock to 17:30, weekdays, 9 o'clock to 12:30, Saturday mornings. One exception to this is the Trafalgar Square office, whose opening hours are 8 o'clock to 20 o'clock, weekdays and Saturdays, and 10 o'clock to 17 o'clock on Sundays. The Bureau de Change services are available to overseas visitors. Visitors can change their money there. You can also change money at Bureau de Change, large hotels, department stores, and travel agents. Be sure to check in advance the rate of exchange and the commission charged, as these vary considerably. Wherever possible, you're advised to use a bank or Bureau de Change, which conforms to the BTA code of conduct. In most cases, this is indicated by display of the code. Listening activity number 3. Now listen to the second part of the lecture. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
Now let's turn to shopping, which may interest you more. In general, shops open at 9 o'clock in the morning and close at 5:30 in the afternoon. In country towns and quieter suburbs, smaller shops close for an hour at lunchtime, and once a week there tends to be an early closing day when most shops shut during the afternoon. Many cities have a late night once a week when shops stay open until approximately 8 o'clock in the evening. You should ensure that anything you bring into the country, such as travelling irons, heated rollers, hair dryers and electric shavers, can be used on the standard British voltage, which is 240 volts, 58Z. Many hotels will, on request, be able to supply adapters for electric shavers. When you travel, you may want to send postcards home. Stamps can be bought at post offices throughout Britain. They are open from 9 o'clock to 5:30, Monday to Friday, and until 12:30 on Saturday. Stamps can also be bought at postal centre stamp dispensers, at large stores and major tourist attractions. For posting letters, you don't have to go far before finding a red painted letterbox. Alternatively, use the letterboxes at post offices. You may ask how much to tip in hotels and how much it is for a taxi. There are no fixed rules on tariffs about this, and the following is intended only as a guide to customary practice. Most hotel bills include a service charge, usually 10 to 12%, but in some larger hotels, 15%. Where a service charge is not included, it is customary to divide 10 to 15% of the bill among the staff who have given good service. In restaurants, if a service charge is not included in the bill, then 10 to 15% is usually left for the waiter. For porters, we usually give 30p to 50p per suitcase. For taxis, 10 to 15% of the fare. Hairdressers, £2 according to how much work they have done, plus 50p to the assistant who washed your hair. If you drive in Britain, you should remember to drive on the left and overtake on the right. The wearing of seatbelts is compulsory for the driver and front seat passengers. Now let's talk about full details of Britain's road regulations. A copy of the Highway Code can be obtained from offices of the Automobile Association, AA, or Royal Automobile Club, RAC, at most ports of entry. These two motoring organisations can also provide plenty of helpful information to all motorists. Contact AA. Telephone is 01 854 7373, 24-hour service. RAC telephone is 0304 204 256, 24-hour service. For something more serious, telephone operators will give you the telephone number and address of a local doctor's surgery. Alternatively, you can go to the casualty department of any general hospital or, in the case of severe emergency, dial 999. 999 is free. Remember, unless you belong to a European Community country or one with which the UK has reciprocal health arrangements, you will be charged for the full cost of medical treatment in Britain, except in the case of accidents or emergencies requiring outpatient treatment only. It would therefore be wise to take out full medical insurance before leaving home.
Listening activity number 4. You are going to hear a dialogue between two students talking about how Parliament makes new laws. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
Hi there, Alison. How are you getting on with your tutorial paper?
Oh, I haven't finished yet. Chris, could you tell me how Parliament makes new laws? This may help for my tutorial next week.
OK, I'll be glad to help. You know, new laws can start in either the House of Lords or the House of Commons. They are usually proposed by the government, although they may be proposed by ordinary members. A law which is being proposed is called a bill until it is passed. Then it becomes an Act of Parliament.
I see. What is the procedure that a bill has to go through?
The bill first of all goes through its first reading, as we call it. This just means that the title of the bill is announced and a time is set for it to be discussed.
Yes. And then what is the next stage?
And the bill will go through the second reading, which is really the debate stage. The bill may be rejected at this stage. If it is an important bill, this may cause the government to resign. On the other hand, it may be passed, or there may be no vote.
If the bill is passed, what will happen?
If the bill is passed, it goes on to the committee stage, where a small group of members meet and discuss it in detail.
Do all the members have to attend the meeting?
It depends. For certain important bills, the whole House can turn itself into a committee, which means that the detailed discussion is carried on by all the members. When the committee has finished its work, it reports the bill and with all the changes that have been made to the House. The bill is discussed again at this stage, and more.
If the bill is passed, what will happen?
If the Or House can turn itself into a committee. Bill decides on what will become law and what will not. The bill becomes an act, and everyone,
Bill,
the members. When the committee has committed, the bill becomes an act, and everyone, but the bill. A set royal gain. But this does not mean that the Queen decides on what will become law and what will not. It is understood that the Queen will always accept bills which both Houses have passed. When the Queen gives her assent, the bill becomes an act, and everyone that it affects must obey the new law.
I see. Thank you for all that information.
Listening activity number 5. You are going to hear a talk about the English policeman. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
The English policeman has several nicknames, but the most frequently used are Copper and Bobby. The first name comes from the verb to cop, which is also slang, meaning to take or to capture. And the second comes from the first name of Sir Robert Peel, the 19th century politician who was the founder of the police force as we know it today. An early nickname for the policeman was Peeler, but this one has died out. Whatever we may call them, the general opinion of the police seems to be a favourable one, except, of course, among the criminal part of the community, where the police are given more derogatory nicknames which originated in America, such as Fuzz or Pig. Visitors to England seem nearly always to be very impressed by the English police. It has, in fact, become a standing joke that the visitor to Britain, when asked for his views of the country, will always say, at some point or other, "I think your policemen are wonderful." Well, the British Bobby may not always be wonderful, but he is usually a very friendly and helpful sort of character. A music hall song of some years ago was called, "If you want to know the time, ask a policeman." Nowadays, most people own watches, but they still seem to find plenty of other questions to ask the policeman. In London, the policemen spend so much of their time directing visitors about the city that one wonders how they ever find time to do anything else. 2 things are immediately noticeable to the stranger when he sees an English policeman for the first time. The first is that he does not carry a pistol, and the second is that he wears a very distinctive type of headgear, the policeman's helmet. His helmet, together with his height, enables an English policeman to be seen from a considerable distance, a fact that is not without its usefulness. From time to time it is suggested that the policeman should be given a pistol and that his helmet should be taken from him. But both these suggestions are resisted by the majority of the public and the police themselves. However, the police have not resisted all changes. Radios, police cars, and even helicopters give them greater mobility now. The policeman's lot is not an enviable one, even in a country which prides itself on being reasonably law-abiding. But, on the whole, the English policeman fulfills his often thankless task with courtesy and good humour, and with an understanding of the fundamental fact that the police are the country's servants, and not its masters.
Listening activity number 6. You are going to hear a short talk about the banks in Britain. As you listen, complete the statements below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for turning up today for this short talk I'm going to give on student banking. Many of you are unfamiliar with the way banks work in this country, and today's talk should just give you a few starting points. Well, as you probably know, you'll need to open a bank account while you are here. The safest place to keep your money is a bank. Choose one that is near where you study. All the major banks in Britain offer special facilities for students and will be only too happy to explain how to open an account. The most useful type of account is a current account. You can pay in money received in any form and then draw it out when you need it by using your chequebook. Writing out cheques in their name can make payments to other people. If you want to draw out cash for yourself, make the cheque payable in your own name or to cash. A check crossed with two parallel lines is even safer, as it must be paid into a bank account. Payment by cross check has the added advantage that when the person to whom you have given the check presents it at a bank, it will eventually come back to your bank and provide proof of payment. Most people now ask their bank to supply only ready crossed checks. Most banks don't make charges if you keep more than a certain amount of money in your account. However, you shouldn't overdraw on your account, that is, withdraw more money than you have in without the bank's permission. If you borrow money from the bank, there will be an interest charge. You will also have to pay a small charge to convert foreign currency paid into your bank into sterling. If you have more money than you need for month-to-month expenses, it is a good idea to open a deposit account for some of it, where it can earn interest. This interest is taxable, but if your bank knows that you are not normally resident in Britain, then you do not pay tax on it. You can't pay by check on a deposit account, and to withdraw money, you should give the bank 7 days' notice, or you'll lose 7 days' interest. When you have established yourself as a satisfactory customer with the bank, they can issue you a check card. This is really an identity card, which guarantees that correctly written checks up to the value of £50 will be honoured by the bank. A check card can be very useful, as many shops and enterprises, particularly in London and the cities, will not accept a check unless a check guarantee card backs it. You can also use it with your checkbook to draw up to £50 cash from almost any bank in Britain. If you also ask for an Euro check card, this can be used in the same way to draw cash from most banks in Europe. Many banks provide dispensing machines, generally set in the wall of the bank outside, where you can draw cash when the bank is crowded or closed. Provided you are a satisfactory customer, the bank can issue you a cash card which allows you to draw up to £100 a day.